Okay. Mr. LaMountain, it's nice to see you again. Having spent 2 hours with you on Tuesday, I think, once
was
the board.
a longer than expected.
Yeah, that was longer than expected. Okay, well, I hope everyone is good. Is today the first day of spring, or yesterday was the first day of
It
spring?
was yesterday.
It's funny, in Arizona, it's like you sort of like the only, maybe make note of first day of fall. First day of spring is like, yeah, it's already been here. Right. Lauren Morocco, I love your background. Is that yours there?
Yeah, the campus launched CDL Class A training. So this is one of our tractors. So I thought I'd rep it a little bit for a background for some calls for the last few weeks. So yeah, this is one of ours right on property.
Well, that's a good lead-in because it is now 10 o'clock on Thursday, March 21st, and we are the Finance Committee meeting of the Arizona Board of Public Secondary is in session. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a Finance Committee meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at ppse.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chairperson, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. Americans with Disabilities Act, persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in alternate format by contacting Kevin Lamont at 602-542-5716 or the TDD number at 800-367-8939. All right. And with that, let's get this party started. So next up, review, discussion, and possible action on acceptance of Finance Committee meeting minutes. And so we have audio recording of the December 7, 2023 Finance Committee meeting. And I move to accept these as the official meeting minutes. Can I get a second, please?
This is Doug. I'll second it.
Okay. And Ms. Suleiman, could you, why don't you do we have to do roll call first?
Yeah, we should do roll call
Yeah,
and
all
then
right. Well, we have a motion, we have a second, and then, but let's back it up and do a roll call and make sure, find out who's actually here other than Lauren Morocco and her truck.
right. Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Mittman's present. Mr. Ball.
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Mr. Wallace.
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present for staff. Ms. Rome.
Present.
Ms. Rome is present. Mr. Blanchard.
Present.
Mr. Blanchard is present. Is Ms. Vetter on? No. And then Kevin Lamont, Executive Director. So.
Okay. All right. And now let's vote.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Three ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Very good. Okay. First up, we have a group of schools that we will be reviewing but also voting on for license renewals. And first up is Arizona Christian University. Come on down. Who do we have here?
I'm here, James Tito. I'm the COO and Executive Vice President. Michael Werner's on the call also. He's our Vice President of Finance. Len Munsell, the President, is not on the call. Jeff Phillips is on the call. He's Director of our Institutional Effectiveness as well. So we're all here, ready to go.
And I'm sorry, did you say, oh, and Mr. Werner is VP of Finance.
Okay, right. Good.
Yep, thanks. Yes.
So we have some good news. Our basketball team made it to the NAIA National Championships, and they're in Kansas City right now getting ready to play Indiana Wesleyan to make it into the final four. So that was a big deal, and everyone's been excited of that. So that's good. We're also way ahead on our financials in terms of from last year to this year. We're about a $5 million. Last year, we had about a $5 million loss. We're not going to be anywhere near that this year. Actually, we're in the middle of a capital campaign right now, and we just had a $2 million commitment, actually a pledge yesterday, that's going to put us over into the black for the end of this fiscal year, even including depreciation and amortization. So right now, with depreciation, you know, if you take out depreciation, we're in the black. But once you add that back in, we're a little bit in the red. But we're going way over right now because we've been having a good capital campaign, and things are happening, and people are starting to make their pledges, which is really nice. Enrollment's been good. We're in the new enrollment cycle right now for fall 2024, and we're predicting about a 3-5% increase in enrollment over the last session. And last time we had about 8 or 9% increase, so we're continuing to grow, and we're really positive.
Okay, that's it. Okay. So what's the, trying to think how to do this. Let's go forward as if you're having a conversation with your Board of Trustees Finance and Audit Committee, right? And so congratulations on the basketball, but since this is the Finance Committee, it's not really relevant. What's the school's plan? Because, you know, you've had significant successive losses, even though you've had, I think, 9 years of increased enrollment, or maybe nine enrollment cycles of increased enrollment, and yet you still lost over $5 million last year. Your composite score is 0.2, if based on your last audit. And I know that you're like right at the edge with respect to your bank covenants. And so could you focus on number one, what's the news from Department of Ed with respect to the composite score? Number two, are you meeting your bank covenants? And because I know that I think your debt service coverage ratio was only 0.25. And if memory serves me correctly, you told me that it had to be 1.0, which is actually a very workable number. And so what's the plan?
Well, in terms of the composite score, we haven't heard anything from the Department of Ed at this point. In terms of the last year's bank covenants, we did not hit the DSCR, like you said, but the head bond holders gave us a waiver letter. So we were able to connect with them. And so when we did our audit, we didn't have a going concern. So the bondholders and the investors were more than happy to work with us on that. They understood the situation. Part of the plan going forward and part of the challenge in terms of being in the black to in the red was when the university took over this larger campus in 2019, there were expenses that not all of the expenses associated with being on this larger campus, I think, were projected in or were fully understood. But as we're going forward, we're understanding more how much it costs us to, you know, run the university, how many students we need to break even and to go into profitability. So that's why you could see for fiscal year 2024, we're going to have a much better picture than for last fiscal year. So right now we're projected on our DSCR for fiscal year 2024, which is coming to June 30th to an end. We're projecting a composite score of way, not a composite score, our DSCR is going to be way above what is required. And our composite score is going to jump from where we are now to 1.10 or 1.11. And Michael, I think I'll let you answer that specifically on the DSCR percentage.
Yeah, so just for a couple notes, the DSCR we're projected right now to hit about 1.83 as long as nothing catastrophic happens. So we're in a much better spot. What is required is a 1.1, so we have a lot of wiggle room. Composite score, I'm still fully grasping the calculation of that because it's a little robust. But from working with our auditors and where we're currently at, we're sitting at about a 1.1 for going forward. So we'll be sitting in the zone right now. But yeah, that's kind of where we're sitting at.
Yeah. Right. So with the number of students we brought in the last enrollment cycle for ground and for online, is you know, and controlling expenses. Now, some expenses that came in that we couldn't control, but it had to do with the facilities and dealing with you know, plumbing issues and roof issues, et cetera, that we're working through. That's why we're doing this large capital campaign also to put together a reserve fund for some of that. But we're right getting to that sweet spot where we have enough students to pay all of the overhead that we need to operate the university totally in the black.
Okay. And you said that you hadn't heard from Department of Education. Is that something that I imagine, you know, I know that it lags a little bit, you know, but I would assume that since the audit was reported to Department of Ed, you would have heard something from them.
Yeah, the Department of Ed seems to be behind about a year. And so by the time we do hear from them, we're going to have a much stronger story to tell them. And that's kind of where that's at. You know, we'll just go over with them where we are now. And some universities have told us it's even longer than that, that they are potentially behind.
Right. And you realize that you have to have 2 years of audited financials to get off of whatever the consequences will be.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Other questions from
Board? Yeah, this is Scott Wallace. Can you just clarify if you, from an operational standpoint, which would be, you know, running an education program, are you in the positive? I'm a little bit confused by that. I know you have a capital campaign, and that's great, and that enters in on your revenues and expenses statement. But, you know, strictly from a educational perspective, when do you expect, or have you achieved positive cash flow?
We're close to positive cash flow. Is the question, if we weren't doing any fundraising at all, would we be in a positive cash flow?
No, I think I would make a distinction between a capital campaign fundraising and operational fundraising. I think operational fundraising is fine as part of your education program.
Right.
But capital would be different.
Right. Well, the projections for the forecast for this coming fiscal year is only taking into account the operational fundraising. When I mentioned the capital campaign, that money is going to be put aside to do things like finish the baseball field. It's going to do things like having a reserve maintenance reserve fund and items like that. So it's not to help us through operationally. So between the tuition that we're bringing in, the fees, the room and board, and the operational fundraising, we're at a place right now that we can be in, well, we are in the black, aside from depreciation on our P&L statement, but next year we'll be in the black, even including depreciation.
Thank you.
Mr. Ball, any questions?
Well, you're asking for the board in your letter dated January 5th to take you off quarterly reporting. Is that correct?
No, we didn't ask that.
No, I think that's coming up later in the agenda.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Tito, you should have said, yeah.
Well, it just seems prudent that we would probably keep you on quarterly reporting until you are in the black totally, even after depreciation, which would be hopefully a year from now.
Well, it's going to be 2 years because you have to be in the black for 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions that we haven't covered so far, Mr. Ball?
No.
Okay. All right, then I'll make a motion. Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman and members of the Finance Committee, just as a reminder, the institution is currently on a stipulated agreement from 2019. That agreement is the $300,000 to maintain the $300,000 bond and to maintain quarterly reporting. So that is still out there. If there is an option here, if the $300,000 bond is, if you were to do 10% of gross tuition for the last time, that bond would go from 300,000 to 2 million, to $2,683,634. I just want to lay that out there is that is an option because they are under a stipulated agreement. However, you can maintain the 300,000 that is currently part of the stipulated agreement if you don't want to change the stipulated agreement.
Okay. And we can change that at an upcoming quarterly meeting if we felt the need to. Okay. Well, with that, I will move to approve the regular accredited vocational and degree granting license, continue quarterly reporting, and maintain the $300,000 surety bond. Can I get a second?
I'll second that, Scott Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Do you guys agree to that?
Yep.
We'll take that as a aye. Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. The vote of three ayes, no nays. That motion will pass.
Okey-doke. Here we go.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Okay. Next up. Hello, let's see where we got. Do we have a visual? There you are.
Okay, I'm here. Right. Connie Bonner.
Well, there's somebody who cares about spring.
That's right. We do. And it doesn't look very springy here today. I also have with me, though, Jamie Sanfilippo from, she's the dean of the Huntington campus in Arizona. And she's not had the opportunity to attend one of these meetings and meet you. So if I'd like for her to just give you the intro on what's happening in Huntington, at Huntington University, Arizona campus.
Welcome.
Jamie? Well? Okay, maybe not.
Maybe the opportunity to experience one of these meetings was, maybe you oversold it a little bit.
Maybe I did, and maybe she got scared off. So I will share with you. I know she was on, so maybe she's having technical difficulties, which does happen. Oh, there she is. Yeah, Jamie, we're not hearing you, though. No.
Well, okay. Sorry.
At least we can see her face.
Can you hear me? Okay. Oh, sorry about that.
Okay. Yes.
All right. I'll just share a quick highlight of our executive summary. Our revenue through November 2023 increased due to three OTD cohorts, while undergraduate revenue remained steady. We reduced expenditures by $130,000 by maintaining costs and not filling one position. Our spring 2024 enrollment was strong across programs with a 90% undergrad retention rate and growth in dual enrollment. Our fall 2024 undergraduate enrollment looks promising with a 16% increase in admissions and 45% more applications, which is tripling our deposits. Our OTD and traditional program applications for spring 2025 are positive and interest in our bridge program is high at a 90% inquiry rate. So thank you again for allowing us the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Jamie. And then I'll share just a little bit about where I think we're going to be this year. At the end of the year, our year end is May 31st. And so we're looking at a positive bottom line overall for the university. I expect us to easily meet our cash flow coverage ratio. Actually, we're projecting it to be 2.57 and we're required to be at a 1.15. And I have our potential composite score at 2.3. So we are feeling very good about the end of the year and hoping to bring that positive bottom line.
Great. Well, thanks, Connie. Mm-hmm. So you're referring to Huntington University overall, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you had almost a $5.8 million loss last year. And so what do you see changing? I know your first, the first quarter that you provided us, I guess halfway through the year,
mm-hmm.
had a net increase in assets. So that was good.
Yes. Yes. And our spring enrollment, we had great retention, which has helped on the revenue side. Also here on our campus, we've had incredible retention in our housing and students living on campus, which has really boosted our revenues there. In addition, we did receive a large life estate this year. That will help us meet our fundraising or our fundraising goals for the year. We are also in the middle of a campaign for raising funds for our athletic facility and have been able to raise quite a bit there as well this year. So that all factors into that positive overall bottom line. And then the stock market is not hurting anything right now.
That's true. You have a lot of money there. Are you allowed to say anything more about the estate gift?
Yes, I certainly can. That was a life estate, and it was farmland here in Indiana, which is a very valuable commodity. And so, that was $3.3 million. Okay. Very significant.
And so I assume that the university liquidates that kind of thing, or you're not going to keep the farm.
We are not. It is, even though we do agriculture here, 255 acres is probably more than we can handle, and it is also a little bit of a distance from our campus. So we do anticipate that we will probably liquidate that in the next year. Can't say for certain. There's people farming it. You know, there's a lot of things to work out on that.
Was that a planned gift, or is that something that more akin to manna from heaven?
Well, it was a planned gift, but it was one that wasn't on our radar.
Right.
Someone
planned it. Just you were unaware of it.
There were some that were aware at the university, but not all. So there, it's one of those deferred gifts that didn't rise to the top until it did. And so we're very grateful for that.
Well, it doesn't matter to someone like you, because until you can book it,
that's right.
it counts towards your campaign, but not towards
exactly.
your financial statements. Okay. Well, congratulations. And note to any of the other not-for-profit, non-profit, social benefit schools on the call today, apparently 99% of wealth in America is not in our bank accounts. And so land gifts, whether it's land or people's estates, IRAs, minimum qualified distributions, all of those things are important.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you guys. Mr. Ball, Mr. Wallace, any questions?
No questions.
Mr. Wallace?
No questions.
Okay. All right, hearing none. I will make a motion to approve the regular accredited vocational and degree granting license and continue quarterly reporting Can I get a second, please?
This is Doug, I'll second it.
Okie doke. With that, Mr. LeMountain.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball? Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. The vote of three ayes, no nays. That motion will pass.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Jamie, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right. Next up, LifeWork Education. Formally, are we going to, like, how many years have to go by, Mr. LeMountain? We don't always say formally Wizard Education. Or is that just like, it's just such a cool name that we want to just keep saying it?
I think it's, Dr. Mittman, I think it's fun. So, but if, you know, if Andrew wants it to come off because it's his show, I would gladly remove the formally Wizard Education.
You know, when our school takes our name, we didn't want the old name anymore. So
if it brightens everybody's day, I'll change the name back to Wizard Education for everybody.
Or if you just wore like a wizard cap.
There we go.
That would suffice. Okay. Do you want to give us like an update?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody.
If you could give us an update that includes the show cause with the accrediting body.
Absolutely. On the
basketball scores, you can do that too, but we're more interested in the show cause.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have a basketball themed update on, so. on the enrollment side and financial side for us, we had a slow, particularly slow December, but then that's kind of ramped back up and we're mapping towards a far better first quarter this year than the first quarter last year in our enrollments across our programs. So we're optimistic that this year is going to kind of continue a positive trend for us on that side. In reference to our show cause notification with APHES, we had a great conversation with a couple of people at APHES just last week. And then the week prior with our programmatic accreditor at KHEP, we had a good meeting with them too. So in all of our, you know, kind of back and forth with the Mesa campus and Peoria campus, we're really drawing a hard line for APHES with prioritizing just to all paramedic enrollments and everything will be at our Peoria campus, which is in line with our the accredited campus with APHES and the accredited program with the paramedic program. And just last week, we went ahead and removed all the other programs from our license with you all, just so that one is kind of singularly operating as the accredited entity with APHES. And then our Mesa campus will house, as a non-accredited campus, will house all the non-accredited programs, which is our EMT, nursing assistant, phlebotomy and everything. And then our marketing team is navigating a separation of the websites as well. So we have a completely different website, which seemed to really satisfy everything that APHES was asking of us. We're just making sure that there was no inadvertent crossover of, you know, offering the non-accredited programs with the accredited program and just, you know, trying to avoid as much or any confusion at all for a potential student that might be trying to enroll. So we're really, you know, we've got a good plan now moving forward for both the physical separation as well as the digital separation of the websites. That was kind of one of the main points of the show cause was just kind of the back and forth decision on whether or not to move forward with trying to accredit like the 1 week caregiver program under the NCIA board, is just not a, you know, financially feasible decision. And so we're just figuring out how to navigate, that separation to keep everybody, happy and avoid any, you know, compliance problems. So that's kind of the main, piece with our show cause notification. The other one APHES was asking for just kind of clarity on the quarterly financial reporting, requirements of the board. And that's something that we did kind of inherit from the acquisition of Wizard back in 2021, I believe. The the Mesa campus, which was formerly under you all as Arizona Academy of Emergency Services, we weren't under quarterly financial reporting. So I may be asking the board for just something just to be able to kind of provide clarity and context to ABHES on the nature of the financial reporting with the board here.
Okay.
I'm sure that staff can assist you with that. Right. Okay. And your cash burn has been kind of accelerating over the past year. And I'm looking at the parent company, LifeWork, and I'm just wondering, you know, how does that look moving forward? And what do you project moving forward this year from a profit and loss standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the parent company brought on a new vice president of finance about midway through last year, who's made pretty significant progress on just kind of right-sizing the cash flow management and everything. So I know that they've made significant strides through the back end of the year. And everything that has kind of been communicated to me on that has again, continued to be a positive looking ahead to this year. So he was unfortunately unable to make it today, but he should be on our next committee meeting as well.
Okay. Questions, Mr. Ball, Mr. Wallace?
No questions.
I'm not hearing any from Mr. Wallace. So hearing none, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. And so I will move to approve the regular accredited vocational and degree license and continue requiring quarterly reporting. Can I get a second?
Doug, second.
Okay, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace, you're on mute. Mr. Wallace may have stepped away, but with two ayes, that motion would pass.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Johnson. We'll see you in a few months.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Now, moving on, we're moving to a new phase of the agenda. And this is review, discussion, and possible action on financial status, request reduction in bonds. And that is Arizona Automotive Institute.
Yeah, so me and our newest CDL tractor will take this. So good morning. Last time we spoke, it was before the holidays, and here we are almost 3 months into 2024, so I hope everyone's year is starting out well. As a refresher, my name is Lauren Morocco, and I'm the Executive Director at Arizona Automotive Institute here in Glendale, Arizona. I do have some corporate team members joining me today. So on the call, we have Dalen Childress, who's the VP of Campus Operations, Jessica Sanders, Chief Compliance Officer, and Joe Feiler, Interim CFO. So I want to start with an introduction and some talking points to display the reasons for our request to be removed from quarterly reporting and a reduction of bond down to the minimum required amounts. I know from hearing from you guys on past occasions from the board that it considers operations and financials of both AAI as a campus located in Arizona and also the financial health of Incor as a company. So I made a point in these introductory remarks on our outcomes to talk about both. We believe these will demonstrate why we are feeling confident as an organization for the reporting year of 2024 and beyond. I would like to start with an outcome that I take a lot of pride in and focus on, which is the retention of our students that start the program. I truly feel that strong financials come from having a sound training product, and that retention is our ability to see the demand and opportunities we have in the communities we serve. In 2023, we, meaning AAI, ended the year at an average of 3.5% drop rate on a budget of 4.7, which was a positive of 38 students to the budget. In other words, we retained an average of 96% of students that started with us. Ancora all-ground campuses combined ended with a 4.1% drop rate on a budget of 4.6. So far in 2024, AAI is sitting at a 1.8% drop rate with single-digit drops for both the months of January and February. Ancora combined is sitting at an average of 3.7%. For the rest of the talking points, I'll be speaking to financials and return to EBITDA, since that is the figure more controllable at the campus level and I have more visibility to into this target. As a quick note, when I say 2024 financials, that will include January and February reporting since March is not yet locked. So high level summary, 2023 was a good year and 2024 looks to be an even better year financially for AAI specifically and Ancora nationally. AAI has experienced 2 years of over $1 million in EBITDA, with 2022 ending at $1.24 million and 2023 ending at $1.43 million. Our forecasting shows these financials will continue for 2024, with our third year of increased profitability expected. We're going to hold all of our programs that we had last year, and then as I alluded to earlier, we did start a CDL Class A training that will add to our portfolio mix. We feel that increased program offering will support 2024 financials very favorably. So for the period of January and February of 2024, Ancora on-ground campus EBITDA is sitting at $2.7 million, which is $654,000 more than their budget and $1.7 million more than prior year at this time. AAI Financials is sitting at $117,000, which is $100,000 more than budget and $133,000 more than last year. Revenue should continue to be strong at AAI given our student population through the first 2 months of 2024 is plus 20 to the budget and 79 more students than we had prior year. We know an overset of population early in the year keeps us offensive on the revenue side of financials that should carry us throughout this year. Another sign that is giving us confidence in 2024 financials is our financial pacing compared to previous years. Our only full break in our academic calendar happens at the last week of December and the first week of January. This break historically gets January financials off to a slower start with that week of revenue not being earned. But the rebounding of profitability earlier in the year is being forecasted at both AAI and Ancora on ground. We are also seeing strong interest in new start activity for our programs, evidenced by start budget wins for both the January and February start, with show rates of up to 85%. This gives us the optimism and evidence to showcase we should hit net positive earlier in the year than we have in the past several. In summary, we believe we have found the leadership, the programs, and the operation to show that we can sustain positive outcomes. So that's why we're asking to reduce the bond and come off of quarterly reporting. Any questions for me?
I just have a question and make sure I'm looking at this correctly. The financial statement I have here in front of me is for the calendar year 2023. And it says it's for Ancora, showing a, let's see. Well, this is for the full company. Shows a loss of $1.7 million. Is that correct?
So I know the campus has been net profitable for the last 2 years. I might let Joe or Dalen speak a little bit more to Ancora. I know there's different verticals. So I just want to probably pass that on over to one of them.
I will take that. Yeah, I have the three sets of reports in front of me to make sure I've got them straight. But yeah, we had in 2023, we had a $1.69 million loss that is forecast in 2024 to go positive.
In the company or the campus level, what was that loss last year?
At the company level, it was 1.1 million, and then at the campus, it was a positive 1.3 million.
Yeah, we've been positive the last 2 years at the campus.
Positive 1,344,000. I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Mr. Wallace.
I don't have any questions.
Okay. So here's the here's my take on it, and so I'll just put this out there, and then let me hear from other board members. The guidance that we operate under is that a school gets on quarterly financial reporting after 2 years of consecutive losses. That's why you're on financial reporting. School gets off of financial reporting and you have 2 years of net increase in income. And so so that's kind of where that's at. So you're not getting up. I mean, I wouldn't move you from quarterly reporting. And I know, Ms. Morocco, that the Arizona school, is outperforming the parent company. And I would suggest that you take that up with the folks at Ancora, get a raise, or maybe get a position higher up in the parent company so you could work the same magic across the institute. As far as once a school is, and the reason that a school has to post a surety bond is that we base it on the gross tuition revenue of Arizona, not of the parent company. And so if our data is correct, the gross tuition revenue is about $7.7 million. Hence the surety bond. Mr. LaMountain, is it $700,000?
Dr. Mittman, the current surety bond is $771,800.
Okay. Yeah, so it's literally 10% of your gross tuition revenue in Arizona. And again, even though the Arizona school is profitable, it's really in almost all cases that I can think of, it's based on the parent company, because we have seen unfortunate circumstances where there is a campus, an Arizona campus, that is actually doing well. I can think of several during my tenure here, and then things go really south on the parent company, and students end up getting left holding the bag. And so the surety bond is a hedge on our part to protect both the students and also the state of Arizona. So my recommendation, well, I'll move that that we continue quarterly reporting and maintain the bond of $771,823. Can I get a second on that? And then we'll discuss.
I'll second that. This is Scott Wallace.
Okay. Mr. Wallace, Mr. Ball, I explained the rationale to Ms. Morocco and her team. Any other thoughts, or we do have other options. I mean, we could lower it to 770,000, or we could lower it to 15,000, or somewhere anywhere in between. And so I'll put that out there to you guys.
Could I ask a couple of questions or have just a little bit of dialogue so I can make sure I'm clear? Because even if the company decides there's verticals or campuses that are not helping the program, they probably wouldn't do it here since we're profitable and we have a market space. So is the bond to protect the Arizona state only if the company? I guess that's where I'm, and it, maybe it's just me understanding why our risk for Arizona wouldn't be lower even if the company ends up and in some other states.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we have an expert here. Mr. LeMount, who not only is the executive director here, but he's also the vice president of the National Association of State Boards like private post-secondary. So, Mr. LeMount, can you answer that question?
Certainly, Dr. Mittman and Lauren. So the issue is always going to be this. So if you've got a great campus, you're running fiscally, you guys are on track, you're doing everything. Unfortunately, your corporate office is taking money and from you and doing something else. And if that particular entity were to falter, you guys are out of business as well. Even though you've got a great campus that is filled with students and everything else like that, we have seen that, unfortunately, in the past where a corporate entity took down a successful campus entity. So the 10% of gross tuition is based upon your gross tuition because it's the number of students that you have in the state of Arizona that go to your campus. Those are the ones that would be covered by the bond, which is the 10% of gross tuition. So I mean, that's just being blunt with the issue at the corporate office.
Okay. And then as far as you said there were options, as far as the quarterly reporting, so if we needed the company to go 2 years profitable, and we expect that in 2024, but that will be the first year, so then the school might be profitable for 4 years, but we need to just continue to do 4 years of quarterly, or is there a semi-annual option? Or we submit quarterly, but maybe only make an appearance. Like, are there options there? Because that will be 4 years of the campus doing quarterly reporting, and assuming that we've been profitable the last two, and we're going to continue to be profitable till the company catches up.
Your problem right now is Ancora. It is not what you're doing at the campus level. So that's where the problem is. That's where the problem lies. And unfortunately, that's when they get that turned around and fixed and there's 2 years there, then the board would have the opportunity to go back and look and make changes to that.
Yeah. And no, we're not casting any aspersion on, you, Mr. Filer, or anybody else in Ancora. That's just the way the board works with respect to branch campuses or parent companies. All right.
Dr. Mittman, just from a, I know we could probably find it in the guidance that we probably already have. From a layers standpoint, and we talk about 2 years of consecutive profitability, is that demonstrated through net income, continuing ops, EBITDA overall, so that we can just, those are all going to be in a positive light in the go forward ops or in the 24, but just clarity on which one of those matters more to you guys in demonstrating financial health.
Mr. LeMount, you want to take that?
It's a board discretion how the board wants to look at profitability for the company.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball, you know, most schools that we see, you know, their net income is, if it's positive, it's usually positive, you know, before EBITDA or with EBITDA. You know, I think that, you know, I think it, you know, our goal is not to make extra work for you guys. And I know that it is extra work. And, you know, anything that we see that's like a positive trend, if the corporation is in the black, you know, with, you know, and the tax, component, you know, helps that out, you know, I think that, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. On the other hand, I know that Mr. Wallace is not just a CPA, and the founder of a CPA firm, but a forensic CPA. And so he probably has something more more intelligent to say about that. And Mr. Wolf Ball is also a CPA.
Well, I agree with you, Dr. Mittman, in that you know, EBITDA is used in my experience
primarily from a credit evaluation, acquisition type information, and so forth. It is an expense. Depreciation component is an expense. And while it doesn't represent the cost of replacement and so forth, you know, there is that factor that the school needs to consider, that certain assets do require replacement and so forth, which means requires cash. So EBITDA to me is a nice metric, but I would agree with you that post, you know, the bottom line is really where we need to focus.
Tim, I wouldn't have positioned that if it wasn't close. And if we counted the EBITDA, we would have 1 year and we anticipate two in 2024. So that would be the starting of the clock if we could paint a right picture in either of those lights. Appreciate the clarity.
Okay, great. Hearing no other conversation, Mr. Ball, Mr. LeMount, we have a motion and a second.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By the vote of three ayes, no nays, that motion will pass.
Okey-doke. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, next up, Pure Aesthetics, commonly known as the Arizona Holistic Institute of Healing Arts.
And hello.
Wow, two in one. Good for you.
Two for one.
All right. You want to give us an update, or do you want us to just start peppering you with questions?
Sure. When we originally submitted our new location financials, we only had four massage students. So I think the revenue that we stated was just based on those four students. It wasn't as an institutional whole. This quarter already, we've added two new programs. We added the massage program. We've had a little challenge with that because we are waiting for the Department of Ed to approve this new location. So we haven't been able to operate out of there yet. We're hoping, we were approved through our accrediting agency back in December. So we had no idea it was going to take this long. So we're hoping any day now that we will have approval to start operating out of there and thus generating more income because we'll obviously be able to have more students. We currently only have an evening class here at this location. And it's a little hard to promote, you know, massage school when you're, the name of this location is Pure Aesthetics Natural Skincare School. But that location will be Arizona Holistic Institute of Healing Arts. But this quarter, we've already generated $457,000 of revenue. So I believe if we keep at this rate, we're going to double our revenue by the end of the year. And we should be even able to increase it beyond that once we have our new location.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, first off, could you give us an update on two actions? One was from the Veterans Administration, and then the second is your accrediting body asset.
Sure. The VA, we did have a change of staff. What particularly do you want to know with the VA?
Well, I guess I'm getting questions from the canine members of the team here. So the question is, are you no longer authorized to offer the online program? It looks like you lost your authorization from the VA. Is that just for a certain program or for other?
No, all the authorization was regained pretty much within 2 weeks, about a year ago. So we're up to approval. Everything's good.
Okay. And I, I'm not sure. Did you remind staff about this? Well, here's staff. The staff is going to weigh in on this also.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Mittman. The clarification here that we're looking for is information from you on did the VA or the state approving agency recommend the school pay an amount approximately $75,000 because you were offering a program online when you were no longer allowed to offer a program online?
We are currently waiting to have a hearing with them. But yes, we had an employee who was getting the emails, so we weren't aware of the fact that the VA said you can no longer operate distantly. We were going off of the Arizona regulations at the time because of COVID.
Yeah, the national emergency.
The temporary
flexibilities.
But I will say that most of those students were on campus the majority of the time. We have a hybrid program, so now all of our VA students are on campus all the time.
Ms. Siller, ma'am?
Yeah, just another question is, so we as a staff, we did meet with the VA, state approving agency, this week. So I guess my question then would be for you, if the VA were to come back and require you to pay the $75,000, and that's going to be give or take a couple of thousand dollars, they were trying to do a quick calculation for us, financially, what would that impact be to you to continue your operations if you have to pay that out?
From my understanding, they would let us pay it over time. So I'm sure that, especially with the fact that we've added two new programs, that's going to generate a lot more revenue. We have a meeting that we are scheduled to, you know, see what our options are and actually.
And the actual amount that VA is requesting is not 75,000. It's about 42,000. But we did request a hearing to dispute that amount.
And that 42,000, was that just tuition or was that? Did that include housing? Because that was a conversation that we had that there's a responsibility for housing as well. Because
it was the total amount.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about the asset action? I know that you received a letter from Asset back at the end of August last year.
I mean, we're still accredited. we have responded to all their requests, and they approved us for our new location. They'll come out here. Hopefully, once we have students, once the Department of Ed gives us a green light, then we can have students, and then the asset will come out here and visit.
So the information that they requested by October 31st, you supplied that?
Yeah, everything was supplied.
Have you received a response from Asset since October 31st?
They
accepted our submission, yeah.
There was
no other action required from us.
Okay. So it was just an interim report?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So a couple of questions. Your composite score is 1.2, right?
It was previously, yes.
Okay. You guys are profitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why is your composite score so low?
So I have three businesses that are all related. I opened a spa to hire my graduates, and it was at a hotel. And initially, it sounded like we were going to have this symbiotic relationship. I moved in there, did the entire build out, and then they wouldn't allow me to promote to the hotel guests. So they misled me in some ways, and luckily my lease is up. I stuck it out, and we no longer have those expenses. It was the rent expense there was great, and unfortunately it was a beautiful building, but nobody knew we were there because the hotel windows were really dark, and they were very, just not very, friendly to work with.
So what you're saying is that, you have three business entities, right? And so Pure Aesthetics is one of them. This spa is the second one. What's the third one?
A skincare line. So they are all related.
Okay. All right. And so why would the Department of Education care about either the skincare line or the spa?
They probably don't. And that's why I've contributed with a promissory note to bring my composite score closer to a 3.
I guess the question is, we just had a conversation with the previous school about a parent company having a different financial position than the Arizona school. And it sounds like what you're saying is, I'll say Kayleen Johnson Enterprises is like the parent company. Pure Aesthetics is analogous to the Arizona school. And so if that's the case, I don't think we've ever seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Levin, I don't think we've seen financial statements on, any of these other entities and then I guess the question is, are they really intertwined? Because if they are, then should have been sharing those with us. If they're not, then there's got to be a way to disarticulate them so that you're not getting dinged by the Department of Education.
They're all three separate entities, and the real estate is separate entities too.
Right. So that brings me back to what is the either the skincare line or the real estate or the spa? What does it have to do with your composite score?
Well, just the fact that, for lack of better, Abdullah.
I can jump in here real quick. Abdullah Shamari, I'm just onboarding here, kind of transitioning to take on the finance for the various entities. The main impact on the composite score is really the owner's draws. So there's owner draws that were taken due to what Kaylin had mentioned with regards to the significant outlay of money she had to make for her spa. And so that should be gone now, that she doesn't have to make those. But that's kind of like the big impact on the composite score is the owner's draws, because it impacts the equity, which then impacts the composite score.
And when was that, the owner's draw?
I mean, it had been for the last 5 years since the term of my lease at the hotel.
Okay, so I see in your on your balance sheet from last year, a 450 $467,000 owner's draw, and that's over a period of time.
Over a period of time, I think it was a little over $170,000 for 2023.
Okay, and what's the First Citizens Bank letter of credit? It's
a line of credit, not a letter of credit.
Right, well, line of credit. So, is that, have you drawn on that?
That was when I was refinancing. I refinanced, and I had, you know, previously for all of my businesses, I had different banks. Then I refinanced and then switched everything over to them. And that was just how that we, you know, positioned it, I guess. I also want to mention that a lot of the draws that I've had to do also were for renovating this new location.
Okay. Yeah. So, but my question is, it's listed as a current liability. And so does that mean that you are expecting to pay $144,537 in this next 12 months?
You pay it down, you mean?
Well, it's a current liability, which means that it's due in, I mean, it may not be due, but if the way that it's listed on your balance sheet as a current liability means that you're obligated to pay it in the next 12 months. So maybe Mr. Shamari, I don't know if you could shed some more light on that, if you're the finance person. Because it screws up your current ratio. It probably adversely affects your composite also. And so, I don't know. And Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm looking at the management report for the period ended December 31st.
Dr. Mittman, you're right on target on that. So let's hear what the school says.
I'm trying to open up my bank account on my thing to see on my phone, but it's spinning to see when that.
I mean, I guess the question is, did you? I mean, you may have access to a line of credit. That's one thing. But if you run a line of credit, it shows up as a liability. And so, yeah, go for it, Mr. Shamari.
Yeah, I think the line of credit is still still active. And so I think as of the last financial reports that were audited, it was due in May of 2023. And again, I'm onboarding here, so I'm getting familiar with the school. It was likely extended, and Kaylin can maybe indicate how long it was extended for the line of credit and when it needs to be paid back.
I'm trying to find out on here. Well, one thing I am in the process of actually refinancing to consolidate my line of credits, so it's all one payment as well. So that is something I'm currently working on, but I'm trying to find the.
So can I? I think the action that we're, you know, contemplating today is to put whether or not you should be on quarterly reporting. We're not here with respect to your license. So I would say based on the conversation that we just had, you're going to be on quarterly reporting. And so that would be the motion that we would make. If you could, and Ms. Johnson and Mr. Shamari, could you guys get together and kind of sort out like what is pure aesthetics? What are some of these other entities? Because it sounds like if you're going to consolidate different lines of credit, then you're going to be kind of commingling, funds from different entities, which would make it, I don't know, hard. I don't think it's great from a business standpoint, but it makes it hard for us to be able to, to do our work as well.
I'm not commingling any other line of, I mean, it would only be that company that I would be.
Okay. All right. And I would recommend if you can, don't have it be a line of credit because you're probably paying, I don't know what, you know, 10, 12% interest and see if you
can.
What's that?
It's 9%, I believe.
All right, well, 9%. But see if you can get it to be, you know, because you have a lot of assets, see if you can get it to be something that's more long-term so that it doesn't adversely affect your current liabilities.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I appreciate the recommendation, yeah. I think Ms. Johnson had kind of just bookkeepers working with her previously, and so they couldn't really work with her from an operations perspective, be able to advise her on a day-to-day basis. And so I'm hoping to be able to support her and her team in doing so, being a CPA, et cetera. So looking forward to taking the board's recommendation and working with that with Ms. Johnson. But appreciate the board
hearing. So we'll find out 3 months from now. All right, so I will move to place Pure Aesthetics on quarterly reporting. Can I get a second?
Mr. Scott Wallace, I'll second that.
Okay, Ms. Lamont.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By the vote of 3 ayes, no nays, that motion passes. And Dr. Mittman, if I can make just a real quick statement. And this is really to everybody that's on the phone call today. If you go back through and you look at the rules and the statutes for the state of Arizona on how to run an institution, your licensed institution, if you receive a letter from your accreditor, from the Department of Education, from any other state entity, that is required by the institution to be provided to us. Don't just assume that we will receive it from those entities. We typically do, but it is the institution's responsibility that if you have an action from in this case, it could be the Department of Veterans Affairs or your accreditor, those need to be forwarded to us as a line of communication. So if in doubt, send it to us so that you're covered and that you've met your requirement under the Arizona revised statutes. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
We still have to vote. Or do we vote?
You voted.
We did vote? Oh, good. Okay.
We did vote.
Let's do this. Aspen University. Okay. Who do we got?
Good morning, everybody. This is Michael LaMontagne, the Vice President of Finance for Aspen University. On the call, we have Dr. Sherry St. Arnall, the President and Chief Academic Officer, as well as Matt LeVay, our CFO for our parent company, and he's available for any questions you might have about the parent company.
And I'm going to take a quick bio break, but we can keep moving ahead, and so I'll be right back. Keep going.
Would you like me to? Okay, sounds good. Okay, so I'm going to start this off. I'm going to be commenting on the quarterly financial report for the third quarter, fiscal year 24, ending January 31st. We submitted all requested financials, reports and statements to the board on February 26th. Revenue for the third quarter for Aspen University generated $6.1 million. Year to date through 9 months, $21.2 million. The student population ended January 31st at 5,222, while we continued to generate strong enrollments at 476, again, with minimal marketing spend. Most of our lead flow is coming through referrals and organic lead flow. Our gross margin in Q3 continues to remain above the industry standard at 63.9%, primarily due to our instructional cost structure, which remains flat from the second quarter. As well as we're going to continue to see a reduction in that as our pre-licensure teach out and we start to see the full impact of that. Aspen's general administrative costs remain flat in the third quarter versus Q2 at $3.5 million. We would have anticipated it to go down slightly, but we had some legal fees and then we had an impairment charge that I'll be talking about more later for our Austin campus that kept that flat. Net income for the third quarter was an anticipated loss of $380,000, with EBITDA at a positive $334,000. The quarter-over-quarter decrease in EBITDA is primarily due to the teach-out of the pre-licensure program, as well as seasonality. Through the first 9 months of the fiscal year, net income for Aspen University was $848,000, with an EBITDA of $3.1 million. Year-to-date, moving on to cash flow, year-to-date net cash provided by operating activities, as on the cash statement we provided to you for Aspen University, was $1.5 million through the first 9 months. Cash at the parent company on January 31st was $563,000 of unrestricted cash and $3.1 million of restricted cash. We also had our fifth straight successful submission of HCM2 received by the Department of Education on February 8th. That's we received approximately $3.8 million. And what that resulted in was a cash balance on the parent company of $1.5 million on the February 29th balance sheet. We submitted our sixth HCM2 submission a couple of weeks ago. That's approximately $2.3 million, and we're awaiting for that payment to come in the fourth quarter. A couple more comments. Accounts receivable, again, continues to be Aspen's largest asset. We have on our books approximately $22 million between current and long-term accounts receivable. This includes HCM2 outstanding payments. And the other comment I wanted to make was 86% of the students of our students are currently on our monthly payment plans, where we only have approximately 14% participating in financial aid. Looking forward to the fourth quarter as we continue to operate, our new start enrollments continue to remain consistent with the third quarter. With our minimal marketing spend, we anticipate approximately 430 to 450 new starts. We have now completely taught out the Phoenix pre-licensure program. There are approximately 26 students remaining in other states in the program. And lastly, as we work with our auditors, with our facilities outstanding, with no more students in them, that we're going to have to take an impairment charge in the fourth quarter that you'll see upcoming in the fourth quarter. And we continue to work on subleasing these facilities, but that's a large expense that we continue to deal with. So at that point, this concludes my comments. Matt and I are open and available for any questions you might have.
This is Scott Wallace. Do you have some estimate of what this impairment charge is going to be? And is it going to involve cash, or is it just going to involve abandonment of assets or retirement of assets?
Yeah, that's a good question, Scott. Matt, do you want to answer that, or do you want me to follow up?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. So it's a non-cash item. We continue to make these payments on all of our properties. So this is an accounting exercise to basically accelerate all of the expense related to non-utilized properties into the current period. So cash will continue to spread out over time, but the expense gets pulled in. And then as we get into the fiscal year, as we start to sublet some of those properties, we'll then have an income flow on our P&L to recognize that sublease income. So we're just kind of bifurcating.
Scott, were you able to hear Matt fully?
Yes, I got the gist of it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Any other questions?
I have no questions.
I was wondering, in one of the reports, you mentioned 87 positions as part of the reduction in force, and also decrease in marketing expenses as one of the ways that you're managing the shortfall in revenue. And I was wondering how that's affecting operations.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So we started that in the middle of last fiscal year, and our enrollments are continuing to still remain strong. We had our second quarter, we had over 796 new start enrollments without any marketing. We had 476 in Q actually was over 500. That was 726 or 96 in Q2. Q3 was 476, and then we're still looking at around 450 starts in the fourth quarter. So with that said, we're still seeing enrollments come through without the marketing spend. So, you know, we're going to start ramping up. Obviously, our HCM2 and our cash flow is tight, and so we have to manage that. And one of the ways we're doing it is through our the way that we evaluate our marketing strategy and marketing plan. The plan is to start putting more dollars back in as we move off of HCM2.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not. I mean, you know, our cost per enrollment, you know, continues to.
What about the reduction in force?
That was predominantly in the second, third quarter of last fiscal year, and that was primarily at the parent company to be able to right-size some of the losses that we've incurred in previous years at our parent company.
Okay. Right. So just for an example, you know, the parent company had obviously been, the revenues have been shrinking, the size of the overall, you know, parent plus the subsidiaries has gotten smaller. So we had some significant force reductions. We had a chief operating officer, but it's no longer with us. A chief accounting officer that's no longer with us. We instead had internally a new controller who was an accounting director to take over that work. We had some enrollment advisors that were no longer needed, and that was at the parent company and at Aspen. We had some business development people. So they were generally, you know, corporate type back office people and enrollment people that we just didn't need because of the smaller size of the company. So we kind of trimmed the cost to kind of work with where we are from a revenue and from a. So it hasn't impacted the student facing functions, is the bottom line.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? If not, we'll see you guys in a few months.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Accord Healthcare Institute. Who do we got? Ms. Bomini.
And Guillermo Lopez.
Oh, good. Another group. All right. Is there anything that you want to start us off with?
So we actually had a positive end of the year. So we ended up in the black, not by a huge margin, but we did. We had an increase in enrollment towards last month. The last quarter was a little bit better. On top of that, we did get some grants in the middle of the year that helped us with that. And we also had another part of it was a loan that we got it forgiven. Mm-hmm. We started out the end part of the year, and it's actually kind of going on over here with two different programs that have increased our enrollment a little bit. And actually this year it should be even better with two different organizations, JFCS and CPLC. And those look like would be, you know, increasing our enrollments, you know, throughout this year. And it started a little bit, but it's not really significant at the end of the year, but this year that is one of the things that we are actually looking forward to really bringing us up a little bit. Aside from those things that were pretty good, we also managed to clean our records a little bit since last time we had a little bit. We still have two different ones that are a little bit of an issue for us, and we are trying to look for somebody to actually clear those out, which are we had an issue with one of the inputs as far as the tax credit, which we're paying. Essentially, it's kind of a duplicate that's showing in there, so we can't really take that out or not, but we're trying to figure some of those things out. We very little bit of cleanup that we need to do in order for our balance sheets to be, you know, much better.
Yeah.
But, you know, pretty short and sweet is what hopefully, you know, our little introduction here.
Okay. Question. On your balance sheet, you have listed SBAD Trez, and it is a $465,082 current liability. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
So that was a PPP loan that was given to us. That's actually one of the ones that we're trying to
throughout the pandemic.
Yeah, throughout the pandemic that we're trying to actually
kind of.
Yeah, it's being paid, but that is a that's what that is. It's a PPP loan from the pandemic.
SBA, from the Small Business Administration.
So when you say it's being paid, you're paying it back, or
we're paying in monthly payments.
A lot of it's really long term.
Correct. That is a long term. Is a what 30 year? Year?
Okay. So the current portion. How much are you paying each month?
$2,432.
Okay. So really, from a current liability standpoint, it's about $26,000. Right.
Yes. Per year. Yes. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So
it shows the whole amount because that's the balance that we have.
Right. So what you'll need to do is you'll need to move that to your long-term liabilities.
Okay. And just place
it out of your current liabilities.
Okay.
When I was looking at your financials, your current ratio is 0.4.
Okay.
But you make this adjustment, you're going to have a much healthier looking current ratio, which will help you with whatever other, you know, banking or other services you have.
Okay.
That was my only question. Mr. Ball, Mr. Wallace?
You may have addressed this. I'm not quite sure, but the same balance sheet shows payroll liabilities of $332,000.
Yeah, we're working with the CPA in order to remove that because it's not a liability. We are actually are not liable in any of the. We pay every 2 weeks the but for some reason and we try before the meeting before submitting the report to fix it, and we're still working with
that. The thing is QuickBooks, because of how it's set up, or I don't know if it's because of the version that we have, the desktop or online.
Right.
Every time we make a payroll and we make the checks, it saves it as a liability. So then when we input the checks and the taxes that we pay, essentially, if we were to put it in there, it looks like we spend double the money or that we made double the money.
Right.
So that's one of the parts that we are trying to fix. So because it is kind of a hiccup that we have in there. That should not be there
That should not be there, exactly. Yeah. Believe me, if I owe $386,000 in payroll, we're not going to be here working.
We submitted that we put a paper in that email that was a mistake that we're trying to solve.
Right.
But any time that I solve it, either it makes it into an income or a bigger debt.
Right.
Well, hopefully by the next time we meet,
right.
We'll have it all cleared up.
We hope to, believe me. We cleared up the based on your advice, the $50,000 that we received and were given. Which was still sitting on the liability, which was not anymore from the previous meeting.
We've been doing the whole last few months just trying to clean up the QuickBooks, which is
right.
Finding out where the money is and putting it in there so the balance sheet looks better.
Yep.
It's just sometimes some of them are old, so it takes a little bit of time to dig out the information.
Right.
So your income statement shows you made a $38,000 profit, but that's after a $50,000 forgiveness of a PPP loan. So you really had a small loss prior to that.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll see you guys in a few months.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
ABL. There must be some other ABL because it kind of rolls off my tongue. Advanced Business Learning Incorporated, Mr. Jenkins.
Yes, sir. Committee members, good morning. Thank you. I'm going to stay with my camera turned off, if you'll indulge me. Yesterday, a plastic surgeon performed some surgery on my nose to remove a basal cell. And right now, I've got a rather large, bulbous, white bandage on my nose, and I look like I'm ready to audition for Bozo the Clown at the next circus meeting.
Can we entertain a motion to actually force Mr. Jenkins to turn the camera on so that we could see that?
Well,
do you have any other updates for us other than your nose?
Yeah. I actually do, and no sporting events. Yes, we've got some good news that based on what we reported last time, that activity has increased significantly with Arizona at Work and WIOA funding for candidates coming across that threshold. We're very pleased to see that on the uptick. We also thought that Army Ignited and Air Force Ignited would be at risk, but it turns out it's not. They are back in the table providing students to us as well, and at a higher rate than we had anticipated. And our work with the five Native American tribes and General Motors kicks off as of the end of April. And that is to remind the committee, that is where the five tribes are going to be putting together a cohort of 25 students per cohort. And that's like I said, starts at the end of April. The tribes will be supporting that with tuition, and General Motors will be supporting that with dollars as well. And the other thing we had talked about doing as of the last meeting was that we were going to increase our social media awareness and campaigns to bring in students from other than organizational sources, which as I just described with the WIOA, Army Ignited, Air Force Ignited, and the tribes. We are now actively promoting our website and landing page and our ad buy. And we're very pleased that the number of students that have responded, they're now in the pipeline, and we have them in front of our tuition funding organizations, and they are being evaluated for how much funding they're going to be getting. And that looks like it's going to be a you know, it's the old, should have had a V8. We should have done this a while ago. We didn't. We're doing it now. We're quite pleased with the number of new students that are coming across the threshold and into the process of being approved for tuition funding. So that looks like it's going to be very positive moving forward. And then we did cut expenses by approximately $170,000 by reducing staff. It just no longer we're needed for what we're doing now. So what we're really anticipating is at the next, assuming we're approved, at the next quarterly meeting, having some substantially hard numbers to report to the committee on these activities.
Okay. Thanks. So your cash and current liabilities is currently a little over $40,000, and your current liability, your current assets.
Right.
Your current liabilities are $192,000. So that's gone up. And the bulk of that is your accounts payable. And so are you, what's your cash flow, and are you able to, are you paying your bills?
We're paying our bills. Our cash flow went up a little bit as we invested in the marketing, and we brought on some, neither Susan nor I are technically able to do the website and landing pages and all of that. So we brought on an outside source to do that. That's now done. And with the students that are in the pipeline and destined to be approved, we look at the cash flow increasing significantly and maintaining our ability to pay all bills.
Okay. And then your loss last year at $146,000, you talked about some decreases in expenses that you've made. And so is that enough to offset that with what you've got in potential starts?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Mr. Ball?
I have no questions.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you have a good spring, and some of the programs I know that, some of them I hope are coming back, like the WOIC, I think.
WIOA.
And I hope the marketing efforts pay off as well, and your cost reductions. And we'll see you in 3 months.
Thank you. All leading indicators seem to be pointed that way. Thank you.
Hey, you got your crystal ball there.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Your eight ball.
That big white nose, yeah.
Okay.
Right. This is Scott Wallace. I'm going to bid you all goodbye. I'll see you next meeting.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
Okay, next up, American Home Inspectors Training Institute. And I see a smiling Stephanie Goat says, do you have something good to tell us?
Well, I'm introducing. So good morning, everybody. My name is Stephanie Gannis. I am a compliance analyst with AHIT, the American Home Inspectors Training, is a leader in the online home inspector education field, offering online licensing and continuing education courses for inspectors around the nation since 1993. On the call with me today are Damon Nolan, who is our accounting manager, and Nicole Andler, who is the director of compliance. And we are happy to answer any questions that you have in regard to our recent submission of quarterly reports.
Okay. Mr. Ball, I'll let you start on this.
Actually, I have no questions.
Oh, no questions? We have to give them at least a question. Well, I guess, you know, we're almost a quarter in to your academic and fiscal year. And I'm just wondering, how are things looking for next year, where you expect things to end up?
Next
year.
I can probably steal part of that. I can say at least for 2024 so far, we're showing kind of a round about 11% growth over prior year kind of same period. All in all, no real issues or concerns. We've had some hiccups kind of in the real estate market as a whole, but we've fielded that pretty well and have been able to kind of take market share, which has helped us to continue to grow.
Okay. And your net income last year, you've had losses the last couple of years, $13.5 million, $9.6 million. Where do you see things ending up this year?
The majority of our losses are really driven from our intangible assets that we are amortizing over anywhere from a 3-year period to 15 years, depending on the specific assets itself. Otherwise, our EBITDA has still been very strong overall. And we kind of continue to see that growth kind of happening. I think all in all, our gross revenue that we're forecasting for this year is going to hit between $92 million to $100 million, depending on just how things go.
Okay. And within the CE shop, what's the range of different programs that you have?
So we kind of do the whole gambit of kind of the real estate market itself, from mortgage lending to home inspection, agents and brokers, appraisals, kind of that whole kind of span.
So this is really your education program. A lot of the other ones are not different types of schools, in other words.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I have no further questions, so thanks a lot. We'll see you guys in a few months.
All right.
Thank you.
And here we are, Inspection Gal. I always want to turn that into Inspector Go. Right? Wasn't that a movie or something?
I think you're remembering Inspector Gadget.
Yeah. That's close. All right. Well,
those usually call it IGO also. So if that's easier for you, then go for it.
No, Inspection Go is good. And while we're at pronunciations, how do you pronounce your very lovely looking name?
Thank you. I'm Asha, and Will Russell is also on, and he's going to kick us off. We have Amy as well as Weston, too. So we're all here. The party's all here.
Okay.
All right. Well, yep. I've been on the last couple meetings, Will Russell, and kind of, you know, talked about in the past Inspection Go. You know, as a business that's kind of growing a network of home inspection businesses, and, you know, we offer various kind of membership benefits to them, which one being the Academy division, which helps them with, you know, recruiting and, you know, we can train home inspectors in various states. So they, you know, can help with the shortfall in staffing. You know, we offer other products to support them, you know, BNI groups. And we've kind of talked in the past, we've been developing a software, which has really been driving most of our losses in the past, because once we stopped capitalizing those costs and expensing them, you know, it's obviously driving losses there. So we, a few updates there. We had two acquisitions in 2023 to further kind of expand on the network that we can develop for everything that we're building in the inspection industry. We converted the majority of all of our convertible debt into equity, had a major conversion in that, where in additional capital that was put in by our major investors. We launched a product here in December, which is kind of our first go at starting to monetize the software that we've been investing in. And we've really seen some success there. November, we started at 28,000 in revenue. We're already up trending 150,000 this month in March. And it really just goes to show, you know, what we've been building was that network to where, as we launch products or our software, you know, leads are never a problem for us. We have 6,000 home sales because of our connection with the industry to start to run and monetize through those. So we're at an exciting point in our kind of our business for that. We just closed another $1.5 million fundraising round here a few weeks ago. We're working on another $2 million to close that round out. The last update, we also, which part of you know, some of these discussions and some of the issues we've had with our financial reporting in the past, we've moved our accounting function to be outsourced through our major investor, Wasatch, who Weston's on the call here represents and is overseeing our internal finance and reporting at this point. So I don't know, I can have him do a few highlights in the financials, or if you want to jump into questions, you know, we can go from there.
Let's hear from Weston.
I think it's kind of an important piece to kind of get a little bit of context, especially where you look at the financials and they don't tell the whole story, right? They say that IGO's losing a bunch of money, and that's concerning. Look at top line isn't where it needs to be to sustain the business. But Wasatch, specifically Wasatch Equity Partners, we facilitated a merger between company we were previously invested in called Repair Pricer, another company called Homebinder, and Inspect and Go, or as we refer to them as IGO. We focus on synergistic investments with our current portfolio, which ranges, I mean, between the Wasatch Group, it ranges into residential, real estate, commercial real estate, and venture investing. So we've facilitated a few rounds of equity, equity investment through equity vehicles for IGO, as well as debt investment or debt lending through a debt vehicle. So from Wasatch Equity Partners standpoint, we're all in on IGO, and we're gonna carry them to the end. We kind of have a record of carrying a lot of these companies through what we refer to as kind of the valley of death, where we differ a little bit from other venture groups, because we're not necessarily looking for, you know, a 3-year exit. We're really a long-term partner for a lot of these companies. We're invested in their success, and we want to see them grow. So kind of to Will's point, we've taken over the finance function of IGO. That's one of the advantages that we bring to these companies that we invest in, is we can take over, you know, their finance, their HR, accounting, obviously, so that the operators can focus on operating and not get jammed up with everything else that needs to be handled. So brief overview on Wasatch and Wasatch Equity Partners. We are, it looks like my name is actually misspelled on that now that I'm looking at it, but we're excited about IGO and we're open to any questions you guys have on the financials. So.
Okay. Mr. Ball.
I guess I'm looking at the, balance sheet year to date for 2023. And if you look under retained earnings, it shows zero for net income loss. And then, I think the income statement
so shows a little bit of loss, right? Are you looking at the total financials?
Yeah.
On the balance sheet consolidated tab?
I don't have it open. I just have it. I printed it out.
Gotcha. So, yeah. So that net income loss as of December 2023, that's $6 million. On January 1, it's going to roll into two retained earnings.
Okay.
It's just the timing of the report. So January 1, that retained earnings is going to go up to negative 17 and a half-ish. And then obviously net income restarts for the year. So that's a closing account. So.
Yeah, what is the $551 that I see as the loss year-to-date? Is that just like the local school or what? I'm looking at the statement of financial reporting. Year to date, 2023 income statement. Actually, it shows a $324 loss.
Wes, and it looks like the Arizona campus P&L tab is where we're at.
Perfect. Send.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
Will, do you want to weigh in on that?
That is just specific to the Arizona campus alone.
So your revenue in Arizona for the whole year was only $1,438.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. We're and I could flip over here. So in 23, if I look, I believe we were around a half a million in revenue in Academy for 2023 between all of our states. So we are registered in, we might have the list here, but there's 20 plus states that we're registered in. And it varies year to year where the students and where the need is, but there weren't a lot of Arizona students last year.
So your $50,000 bond surely covers any liability there.
I think we're in good shape there.
Yeah. Okay, I don't have any other questions.
Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot. Weston Stewart with a T. Thank you very much for clarifying the role of the private equity group that you guys have and understanding, because I was trying to figure out what your plan was for erasing the $6 million loss last year, but it sounds like this current round of investment is going to take care of that, and I understand that now. All right, well, good. All right, well, we'll see you guys in a few months and look forward to hearing on your progress.
And Mr. Whitman, I just have one question for you as well. Would this be the time to ask to be considered to move off of the quarterly at some point, or do we send that after the meeting?
I think just for clarification, you need 2 years of profitability.
Okay.
And so I think, you have two more years.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, so that's kind of the criteria regardless is 2 years of profitability. Okay, that's helpful. Right. Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Yeah.
Very welcome. All right. With that, let me take a look at the agenda and see if there's anything else that we need to do. I move to adjourn. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.